5. Sister Mary, a message, a visit from Ralph. Norman's fate. Sister Mary again. When Roland awoke, it was full daylight, the silk roof overhead a bright white and billowing in a mild breeze. The doctor bugs were singing contentedly. Beside him on his left, Norman was heavily asleep, with his head turned so far to one side that his stubbly cheek rested on his shoulder. Roland and John Norman were the only ones here. Farther down on their side of the infirmary, the bed where the bearded man had been was empty, its top sheet pulled up and neatly tucked in, the pillow neatly nestled in a crisp white case. The complication of slings in which his body had rested was gone. Roland remembered the candles, the way their glow had combined and streamed up in a column, illuminating the sisters as they gathered around the bearded man, giggling, their damned bells jingling. Now, as if summoned by his thoughts, came Sister Mary, gliding along rapidly with Sister Louise in her wake. Louise bore a tray and looked nervous. Mary was frowning, obviously not in good temper. "To be grumpy after you've fed so well," Roland thought. "Fie, sister." She reached the gunslinger's bed and looked down at him.
"I have little to thank ye for, Si," she said with no preamble.
"Have I asked for your thanks?"
He responded in a voice that sounded as dusty and little used as the pages of an old book. She took no notice.
"Ye've made one who was only impudent and restless with her place, outright rebellious. Well, her mother was the same way, and died of it not long after returning Jenna to her proper place. Raise your hand, thankless man."
"I can't. I can't move at all."
"Oh, Callie, haven't you heard it said, 'Fool not your mother, lest she's out of face'? I know pretty well what ye can and can't do. Now raise your hand."
Roland raised his right hand, trying to suggest more effort than it actually took. He thought that this morning he might be strong enough to slip free of the slings, but what then? Any real walking would be beyond him for hours yet, even without another dose of medicine. And behind Sister Mary, Sister Louise was taking the cover from a fresh bowl of soup. As Roland looked at it, his stomach rumbled. Big Sister heard and smiled a bit.
"Even lying in bed builds an appetite in a strong man if it's done long enough. Wouldn't you say so, Jason, brother of John?"
"My name is James, as you well know, sister."
"Do I?"
She laughed angrily.
"Oh, la! And if I whipped your little sweetheart hard enough and long enough, until the blood jumped out of her back like drops of sweat, let us say, should I not whip a different name out of her? Or didn't ye trust her with it during your little talk?"
"Touch her and I'll kill you."
She laughed again. Her face shimmered. Her firm mouth turned into something that looked like a dying jellyfish.
"Speak not of killing to us, Cully, lest we speak of it to you."
"Sister, if you and Jenna don't see eye to eye, why not release her from her vows and let her go her course?"
"Such as us can never be released from our vows, nor be let go. Her mother tried and then came back, her dying and the girl sick. Why, it was we nursed Jenna back to health after her mother was nothing but dirt in the breeze that blows out toward Endworld, and how little she thanks us. Besides, she bears the dark bells, the sigil of our sisterhood, of our quartet. Now eat. Your belly says ye're hungry."
Sister Louise offered the bowl, but her eyes kept drifting to the shape the medallion made under the breast of his bed-dress.
"Don't like it, do you?"
Roland thought, and then remembered Louise by candlelight, the freighter's blood on her chin, her ancient eyes eager as she leaned forward to lick his spend from Sister Mary's hand. He turned his head aside.
I want nothing.
But you're hungry, Louise protested. If he don't eat, James, how will he get his strength back?
Send Jenna. I'll eat what she brings. Sister Mary's frown was black.
You'll see her no more. She's been released from Thoughtful House only on her solemn promise to double her time of meditation and to stay out of infirmary. Now eat, James, or whoever ye are. Take what's in the soup, or we'll cut ye with knives and rub it in with flannel poultices. Either way, makes no difference to us, does it, Louise?
Nah,
Louise said. She still held out the bowl. Steam rose from it and the good smell of chicken.
But it might make a difference to you.
Sister Mary grinned humorlessly, baring her unnaturally large teeth.
Flowing blood's risky around here. The doctors don't like it. It stirs them up.
It wasn't just the bugs that were stirred up at the sight of blood, and Roland knew it. He also knew he had no choice in the matter of the soup. He took the bowl from Louise and ate slowly. He would have given much to wipe out the look of satisfaction he saw on Sister Mary's face.
Good, she said,
after he handed the bowl back and she peered inside to make sure it was completely empty. His hand thumped back into the sling which had been rigged for it, already too heavy to hold up. He could feel the world drawing away again. Sister Mary leaned forward, the billowing top of her habit touching the skin of his left shoulder. He could smell her, an aroma both ripe and dry, and would have gagged if he'd had the strength.
Have that foul gold thing off ye when your strength comes back a little. Put it in the pissoir under the bed, where it belongs. For to be even this close to where it lies hurts my head and makes my throat close.
Speaking with enormous effort, Roland said,
If you want it, take it.
How can I stop you, you bitch?
Once more, her frown turned her face into something like a thunderhead. He thought she would have slapped him if she had dared touch him so close to where the medallion lay. Her ability to touch seemed to end above his waist, however.
I think you had better consider the matter a little more fully, she said. I can still have Jenna whipped if I like. She bears the dark bells, but I am the big sister. Consider that very well.
She left. Sister Louise followed, casting one look, a strange combination of fright and lust, back over her shoulder. Roland thought,
I must get out of here, I must.
Instead, he drifted back to that dark place which wasn't quite sleep. Or perhaps he did sleep, at least for a while. Perhaps he dreamed. Fingers once more caressed his fingers, and lips first kissed his ear, and then whispered into it.
Look beneath your pillow, Roland, but let no one know I was here.
At some point after this, Roland opened his eyes again, half expecting to see Sister Jenna's pretty young face hovering above him, and that comma of dark hair once more poking out from beneath her wimple. There was no one. The swags of silk overhead were at their brightest, and although it was impossible to tell the hours in here with any real accuracy, Roland guessed it to be around noon, perhaps 3 hours since his second bowl of the sister's soup. Beside him, John Norman still slept, his breath whistling out in faint nasal snores. Roland tried to raise his hand and slide it under his pillow. The hand wouldn't move. He could wiggle the tips of his fingers, but that was all. He waited, calming his mind as well as he could, gathering his patience. Patience wasn't easy to come by. He kept thinking about what Norman had said, that there had been 20 survivors of the ambush, at least to start with. One by one they went, until only me and that one down yonder was left. And now you. The girl wasn't here.
His mind spoke in the soft, regretful tone of Alain, one of his old friends, dead these many years now. She wouldn't dare, not with the others watching. That was only a dream you had. But Roland thought perhaps it had been more than a dream. Some length of time later, the slowly shifting brightness overhead made him believe it had been about an hour, Roland tried his hand again. This time he was able to get it beneath his pillow. This was puffy and soft, tucked snugly into the wide sling that supported the gunslinger's neck. At first he found nothing, but as his fingers worked their slow way deeper, they touched what felt like a stiffish bundle of thin rods. He paused, gathering a little more strength. Every movement was like swimming in glue, and then burrowed deeper. It felt like a dead bouquet. Wrapped around it was what felt like a ribbon. Roland looked around to make sure the ward was still empty and Norman still asleep, then drew out what was under the pillow. It was six brittle stems of fading green with brownish reed heads at the tops. They gave off a strange yeasty aroma that made Roland think of early morning begging expeditions to the great house kitchens as a child, forays he had usually made with Cuthbert. The stems were tied with a wide white silk ribbon and smelled like burnt toast. Beneath the ribbon was a fold of cloth. Like everything else in this cursed place, it seemed, the cloth was of silk. Roland was breathing hard and could feel drops of sweat on his brow. Still alone, though. Good. He took the scrap of cloth and unfolded it. Printed painstakingly in blurred charcoal letters was this message. Nibble heads, once each hour. Too much, cramps, or death. Tomorrow night. Can't be sooner. Be careful. No explanation, but Roland supposed none was needed. Nor did he have any option. If he remained here, he would die. All they had to do was have the medallion off him, and he felt sure Sister Mary was smart enough to figure a way to do that. He nibbled at one of the dry reed heads. The taste was nothing like the toast they had begged from the kitchen as boys. It was bitter in his throat and hot in his stomach. Less than a minute after his nibble, his heart rate had doubled. His muscles awakened, but not in a pleasant way, as after good sleep. They felt first trembly and then hard, as if they were gathered into knots. This feeling passed rapidly, and his heartbeat was back to normal before Norman stirred awake an hour or so later. But he understood why Jenna's note had warned him not to take more than a nibble at a time. This was very powerful stuff. He slipped the bouquet of reeds back under the pillow, being careful to brush away the few crumbles of vegetable matter which had dropped to the sheet. Then he used the ball of his thumb to blur the painstaking charcoaled words on the bit of silk. When he was finished, there was nothing on the square but meaningless smudges. The square he also tucked back under his pillow. When Norman awoke, he and the gunslinger spoke briefly of the young scout's home. Delane it was, sometimes known jestingly as Dragon's Lair or Liar's Heaven. All tall tales were said to originate in Delane. The boy asked Roland to take his medallion and that of his brother home to their parents, if Roland was able, and explain as well as he could what had happened to James and John, sons of Jesse. "You'll do that all yourself," Roland said. "No." Norman tried to raise his hand, perhaps to scratch his nose, and was unable to do even that. The hand rose perhaps 6 inches, then fell back to the counterpane with a small thump. "I think not. It's a pity for us to have run up against each other this way, you know. I like you."
"And I you, John Norman. Would that we were better met."
"Aye, when not in the company of such fascinating ladies."
He dropped off to sleep again soon after.
Roland never spoke with him again, although he certainly heard from him, yes. Roland was lying above his bed, shamming sleep as John Norman screamed his last. Sister Michella came with his evening soup just as Roland was getting past the shivery muscles and galloping heartbeat that resulted from his second nibble of brown reed. Michella looked at his flushed face with some concern, but had to accept his assurances that he did not feel feverish. She couldn't bring herself to touch him and judge the heat of his skin for herself. The medallion held her away. With the soup was a pupkin. The bread was leathery and the meat inside it tough, but Roland demolished it greedily just the same. Michella watched with a complacent smile, hands folded in front of her, nodding from time to time. When he had finished the soup, she took the bowl back from him carefully, making sure their fingers did not touch.
"You're healing," she said. "Soon you'll be on your way, and we'll have just your memory to keep, Jim."
"Is that true?" he asked quietly.
She only looked at him, touched her tongue against her upper lip, giggled, and departed. Roland closed his eyes and lay back against his pillow, feeling lethargy steal over him again. Her speculative eyes, her peeping tongue. He had seen women look at roast chickens and joints of mutton that same way, calculating when they might be done. His body badly wanted to sleep, but Roland held on to wakefulness for what he judged was an hour, then worked one of the reeds out from under the pillow. With a fresh infusion of their can't-move medicine in his system, this took an enormous effort, and he wasn't sure he could have done it at all had he not separated this one reed from the ribbon holding the others. "Tomorrow night," Jenna's note had said. If that meant escape, the idea seemed preposterous. The way he felt now, he might be lying in his bed until the end of the age. He nibbled. Energy washed into his system, clenching his muscles and racing his heart, but the burst of vitality was gone almost as soon as it came, buried beneath the sister's stronger drug. He could only hope and sleep. When he woke, it was full dark, and he found he could move his arms and legs in their network of slings almost naturally. He slipped one of the reeds out from beneath his pillow and nibbled cautiously. She had left half a dozen, and the first two were now almost entirely consumed. The gunslinger put the stem back under the pillow, then began to shiver like a wet dog in a downpour. "I took too much," he thought. "I'll be lucky not to convulse." His heart racing like a runaway engine. And then, to make matters worse, he saw candlelight at the far end of the aisle. A moment later, he heard the rustle of their gowns and the whisk of their slippers.
"Gods, why now? They'll see me shaking, they'll know."
Calling on every bit of his willpower and control, Roland closed his eyes and concentrated on stilling his jerking limbs. If only he had been in bed instead of in these cursed slings, which seemed to tremble as if with their own ague at every movement. The little sisters drew closer. The light of their candles bloomed red within his closed eyelids. Tonight they were not giggling nor whispering among themselves. It was not until they were almost on top of him that Roland became aware of the stranger in their midst, a creature that breathed through its nose in great slobbery gasps of mixed air and snot. The gunslinger lay with his eyes closed, the gross twitches and jumps of his arms and legs under control, but with his muscles still knotted and crampy, thrumming beneath the skin. Anyone who looked at him closely would see at once that something was wrong with him. His heart was larruping away like a horse under the whip. Surely they must see. But it wasn't him they were looking at. Not yet, at least.
"Have it off him," Mary said.
She spoke in a bastardized version of the low speech Roland could barely understand.
"Then t'other'n. Go on, Ralph."
"You says whisky?"
the slobberer asked, his dialect even heavier than Mary's.
"You says baccy?"
"Yes, yes, plenty whisky and plenty smoke, but not until you have these wretched things off."
impatient, perhaps afraid as well. Roland cautiously rolled his head to the left and cracked his eyelids open. 5 of the 6 little sisters of Eluria were clustered around the far side of the sleeping John Norman's bed, their candles raised to cast their light upon him. It also cast light upon their own faces, faces which would have given the strongest man nightmares. Now in the ditch of the night their glamours were set aside, and they were but ancient corpses in voluminous habits. Sister Mary had one of Roland's guns in her hand. Looking at her holding it, Roland felt a bright flash of hate for her, and promised himself she would pay for her temerity. The thing standing at the foot of the bed, strange as it was, looked almost normal in comparison with the sisters. It was one of the green folk. Roland recognized Ralph at once. He would be a long time forgetting that bowler hat. Now Ralph walked slowly around to the side of Norman's bed closest to Roland, momentarily blocking the gunslinger's view of the sisters. The mutie went all the way to Norman's head, however, clearing the hags to Roland's slitted view once more. Norman's medallion lay exposed. The boy had perhaps wakened enough to take it out of his bed-dress, hoping it would protect him better so. Ralph picked it up in his melted tallow hand. The sisters watched eagerly in the glow of their candles as the green man stretched it to the end of its chain and then put it down again. Their faces drooped in disappointment.
"Don't care for such as that," Ralph said in his clotted voice. "Want whiskey. Want baccy."
"You shall have it," Sister Mary said. "Enough for you and all your verminous clan. But first you must have that horrid thing off him, off both of them, do you understand? And you shan't tease us."
"Or what?" Ralph asked.
He laughed. It was a choked and gargly sound, the laughter of a man dying from some evil sickness of the throat and lungs, but Roland still liked it better than the giggles of the sisters.
"Or what, Sister Mary? You'll drink my blood? My blood 'd drop ye dead where ye stand and going in the dark."
Mary raised the gunslinger's revolver and pointed it at Ralph.
"Take that wretched thing, or you die where you stand."
"And die after I've done what you want, likely."
Sister Mary said nothing to that. The others peered at him with their black eyes. Ralph lowered his head, appearing to think. Roland suspected his friend Bowler Hat could think, too. Sister Mary and her cohorts might not believe that, but Ralph had to be trigged to have survived as long as he had. But of course when he came here he hadn't considered Roland's guns.
"Smasher was wrong to give them shooters to you," he said at last. "Give 'em and not tell me. Did you give him whiskey? Give him baccy?"
"That's none of yours," Sister Mary replied. "You have that gold piece off the boy's neck right now, or I'll put one of yonder man's bullets in what's left of your brain."
"All right," Ralph said. "Just as you wish, Si."
Once more he reached down and took the gold medallion in his melted fist. That he did slow. What happened after happened fast. He snatched it away, breaking the chain and flinging the gold heedlessly into the dark. With his other hand he reached down, sank his long and ragged nails into John Norman's neck, and tore it open. Blood flew from the hapless boy's throat in a jetting, heart-driven gush, more black than red in the candlelight, and he made a single bubbly cry. The women screamed, but not in horror. They screamed as women do in a frenzy of excitement. The green man was forgotten. Roland was forgotten, all was forgotten save the life's blood pouring out of John Norman's throat. They dropped their candles. Mary dropped Roland's revolver in the same hapless, careless fashion. The last the gunslinger saw as Ralph darted away into the shadows Whiskey and tobacco another time, wily Ralph must have thought. Tonight he had best concentrate on saving his own life. Was the sisters bending forward to catch as much of the flow as they could before it dried up? Roland lay in the dark, muscles shivering, heart pounding, listening to the harpies as they fed on the boy lying in the bed next to his own. It seemed to go on forever, but at last they had done with him. The sisters relit their candles and left, murmuring. When the drug in the soup once more got the better of the drug in the reeds, Roland was grateful. Yet for the first time since he'd come here, his sleep was haunted. In his dream, he stood looking down at the bloated body in the town trough, thinking of a line in the book marked Registry of Misdeeds and Redress. Green folk sent hence, it had read. And perhaps the green folk had been sent hence, but then a worse tribe had come. The Little Sisters of Eluria, they called themselves. And a year hence they might be the Little Sisters of Tihas, or of Cambero, or of some other far western village. They came with their bells and their bugs. From where? Who knew? Did it matter? A shadow fell beside his on the scummy water of the trough. Roland tried to turn and face it. He couldn't. He was frozen in place. Then a green hand grasped his shoulder and whirled him about. It was Ralph. His bowler hat was cocked back on his head. John Norman's medallion, now red with blood, hung around his neck.
"Boo!"
cried Ralph, his lips stretching in a toothless grin. He raised a big revolver with worn sandalwood grips. He thumbed the hammer back. And Roland jerked awake, shivering all over, dressed in skin both wet and icy cold. He looked at the bed on his left. It was empty, the sheet pulled up and tucked about neatly, the pillow resting above it in its snowy sleeve. Of John Norman there was no sign. It might have been empty for years, that bed. Roland was alone now. Gods help him, he was the last patient of the Little Sisters of Eluria, those sweet and patient hospitalers. The last human being still alive in this terrible place, the last with warm blood flowing in his veins. Roland, lying suspended, gripped the gold medallion in his fist and looked across the aisle at the long row of empty beds. After a little while, he brought one of the reeds out from beneath his pillow and nibbled at it. When Mary came 15 minutes later, the gunslinger took the bowl she brought with a show of weakness he didn't really feel. Porridge instead of soup this time, but he had no doubt the basic ingredient was still the same.
"How well ye look this morning, Si," Big Sister said.
She looked well herself. There were no shimmers to give away the ancient wampir hiding inside her. She had supped well, and her meal had firmed her up. Roland's stomach rolled over at the thought.
"Ye'll be on your pins in no time, I'll warrant."
"That's shit," Roland said, speaking in an ill-natured growl. "Put me on my pins and you'd be picking me up off the floor directly after. I've started to wonder if you're not putting something in the food." She laughed merrily at that.
"La, you lads! Always eager to blame your weakness on a scheming woman. How scared of us ye are. Aye, way down in your little boy's hearts, how scared ye are."
"Where's my brother? I dreamed there was a commotion about him in the night, and now I see his bed's empty." Her smile narrowed. Her eyes glittered.
"He came over fevery and pitched a fit. We've taken him to Thoughtful House, which has been home to contagion more than once in its time."
"To the grave is where you've taken him," Roland thought. "Mayhap that is a Thoughtful House, but little would you know it, Si, one way or another."
"I know ye're no brother to that boy," Mary said, watching him eat.
Already Roland could feel the stuff hidden in the porridge draining his strength once more.
"Sigil or no sigil, I know ye are no brother to him. Why do you lie? 'Tis a sin against God.
What gives you such an idea, Si? Roland asked, curious to see if she would mention the guns.
Big sister knows what she knows. Why not fess up, Jimmy? Confession's good for the soul, they say.
Send me Jenna to pass the time, and perhaps I'd tell you much, Roland said. The narrow bone of smile on Sister Mary's face disappeared like chalk writing in a rainstorm.
Why would ye talk to such as her?
She's passing fair, Roland said. Unlike some. Her lips pulled back from her overlarge teeth.
Ye'll see her no more, Cully. Ye've stirred her up, so you have, and I won't have that.
She turned to go, still trying to appear weak and hoping he would not overdo it. Acting was never his forte. Roland held out the empty porridge bowl.
Do you not want to take this?
Put it on your head and wear it as a nightcap for all of me. Or stick it in your ass. You'll talk before I'm done with ye, Cully. Talk till I bid you shut up and then beg to talk some more.
On this note she swept regally away, hands lifting the front of her skirt off the floor. Roland had heard that such as she couldn't go about in daylight, and that part of the old tales was surely a lie. Yet another part was almost true, it seemed. A fuzzy, amorphous shape kept pace with her, running along the row of empty beds to her right. But she cast no real shadow at all. 6. Jenna, Sister Coquina, Tamra, Michella, Louise, the cross dog, what happened in the sage. That was one of the longest days of Roland's life. He dozed, but never deeply. The reeds were doing their work, and he had begun to believe that he might, with Jenna's help, actually get out of here. And there was the matter of his guns as well. Perhaps she might be able to help there, too. He passed the slow hours thinking of old times, of Gilead and his friends, of the riddling he had almost won at one wide earth fair. In the end, another had taken the goose, but he had had his chance, aye. He thought of his mother and father. He thought of Abel Vanay, who had limped his way through a life of gentle goodness, and Eldred Jonas, who had limped his way through a life of evil, until Roland had blown him loose of his saddle one fine desert day. He thought, as always, of Susan. "If you love me, then love me," she'd said. And so he had. So he had. In this way the time passed. At rough hourly intervals he took one of the reeds from beneath his pillow and nibbled it. Now his muscles didn't tremble so badly as the stuff passed into his system, nor his heart pound so fiercely. The medicine in the reeds no longer had to battle the sister's medicine so fiercely, Roland thought. The reeds were winning. The diffused brightness of the sun moved across the white silk ceiling of the ward, and at last the dimness which always seemed to hover at bed level began to rise. The long room's western wall bloomed with the rose melting to orange shades of sunset. It was Sister Tamra who brought him his dinner that night, soup and another popkin. She also laid a desert lily beside his hand. She smiled as she did it. Her cheeks were bright with color. All of them were bright with color today, like leeches that had gorged until they were full almost to bursting.
"From your admirer, Jimmy," she said. "She's so sweet on ye. The lily means do not forget my promise. What has she promised ye, Jimmy, brother of Johnny?"
"That she'd see me again and we'd talk." Tamra laughed so hard that the bells lining her forehead jingled. She clasped her hands together in a perfect ecstasy of glee.
"Sweet as honey, oh yes."
She bent her smiling gaze on Roland.
"It's sad such a promise can never be kept. Ye'll never see her again, pretty man.
She took the bowl.
Big sister has decided.
She stood up, still smiling.
Why not take that ugly gold sigil off?
I think not.
Your brother took his off, look.
She pointed, and Roland spied the gold medallion lying far down the aisle, where it had landed when Ralph threw it. Sister Tamra looked at him, still smiling.
He decided it was part of what was making him sick and cast it away. Ye'd do the same, were ye wise.
Roland repeated, I think not.
So,
she said dismissively, and left him alone with the empty beds glimmering in the thickening shadows. Roland hung on in spite of growing sleepiness until the hot colors bleeding across the infirmary's western wall had cooled to ashes. Then he nibbled one of the reeds and felt strength, real strength, not a jittery, heart-thudding substitute, bloom into his body. He looked toward where the castaway medallion gleamed in the last light and made a silent promise to John Norman. He would take it with the other one to Norman's kin, if Ka chanced that he should encounter them in his travels. Feeling completely easy in his mind for the first time that day, the gunslinger dozed. When he awoke, it was full dark. The doctor bugs were singing with extraordinary shrillness. He had taken one of the reeds out from under the pillow and had begun to nibble on it when a cold voice said,
So, Big Sister was right. Ye've been keeping secrets.
Roland's heart seemed to stop dead in his chest. He looked around and saw Sister Coquina getting to her feet. She had crept in while he was dozing and hidden under the bed on his right side to watch him.
Where did ye get that? She asked. Was it?
He got it from me. Coquina whirled about. Jenna was walking down the aisle toward them. Her habit was gone. She still wore her wimple with its forehead fringe of bells, but its hem rested on the shoulders of a simple checkered shirt. Below this she wore jeans and scuffed desert boots. She had something in her hands. It was too dark for Roland to be sure, but he thought,
You,
Sister Coquina whispered with infinite hate.
When I tell Big Sister.
You'll tell no one anything, Roland said. If he had planned his escape from the slings that entangled him, he no doubt would have made a bad business of it. But as always, the gunslinger did best when he thought least. His arms were free in a moment, so was his left leg. His right caught at the ankle, however, twisting, hanging him up with his shoulders on the bed and his leg in the air. Coquina turned on him, hissing like a cat, her lips pulled back from teeth that were needle-sharp. She rushed at him, her fingers splayed, the nails at the ends of them looked sharp and ragged. Roland clasped the medallion and shoved it out toward her. She recoiled from it, still hissing, and whirled back to Sister Jenna in a flare of white skirt.
"I'll do for ye, ye interfering troll,"
she cried in a low, harsh voice. Roland struggled to free his leg and couldn't. It was firmly caught, the shitting sling actually wrapped around the ankle somehow, like a noose. Jenna raised her hands, and he saw he had been right. It was his revolvers she had brought, holstered and hanging from the two old gun belts he had worn out of Gilead after the last burning.
Shoot her, Jenna, shoot her!
Instead, still holding the holstered guns up, Jenna shook her head as she had on the day when Roland had persuaded her to push back her wimple so he could see her hair. The bells rang with a sharpness that seemed to go into the gunslinger's head like a spike. The dark bells, the sigil of their quartet. What? The sound of the doctor bugs rose to a shrill, reedy scream that was eerily like the sound of the bells Jenna wore. Nothing sweet about them now. Sister Coquina's hands faltered on their way to Jenna's throat. Jenna herself had not so much as flinched or blinked her eyes.
Now, Coquina whispered, you can't.
I have, Jenna said. And Roland saw the bugs. Descending from the legs of the bearded man, he'd observed a battalion. What he saw coming from the shadows now was an army to end all armies. Had they been men instead of insects, there might have been more than all the men who had ever carried arms in the long and bloody history of Midworld. Yet the sight of them advancing down the boards of the aisle was not what Roland would always remember, nor what would haunt his dreams for a year or more. It was the way they coated the beds. These were turning black two by two on both sides of the aisle, like pairs of dim rectangular lights going out. Coquina shrieked and began to shake her own head, to ring her own bells. The sound they made was thin and pointless compared with the sharp ringing of the dark bells. Still the bugs marched on, darkening the floor, blacking out the beds. Jenna darted past the shrieking Sister Coquina, dropped Roland's guns beside him, then yanked the twisted sling straight with one hard pull. Roland slid his leg free. "Come," she said. "I've started them, but staying them could be a different thing." Now Sister Coquina's shrieks were not of horror, but of pain. The bugs had found her. "Don't look," Jenna said, helping Roland to his feet. He thought that never in his life had he been so glad to be upon them. "Come, we must be quick. She'll rouse the others. I've put your boots and clothes aside up the path that leads away from here. I carried as much as I could. How are ye? Are ye strong?"
"Thanks to you."
How long he would stay strong, Roland didn't know, and right now it wasn't a question that mattered. He saw Jenna snatch up two of the reeds. In his struggle to escape the slings, they had scattered all over the head of the bed, and then they were hurrying up the aisle, away from the bugs and from Sister Coquina, whose cries were now failing. Roland buckled on his guns and tied them down without breaking stride. They passed only three beds on each side before reaching the flap of the tent, and it was a tent, he saw, not a vast pavilion. The silk walls and ceiling were fraying canvas, thin enough to let in the light of a three-quarters kissing moon. And the beds weren't beds at all, but only a double row of shabby cots. He turned and saw a black, writhing hump on the floor where Sister Coquina had been. At the sight of her, Roland was struck by an unpleasant thought. "I forgot John Norman's medallion." A keen sense of regret, almost of mourning, went through him like wind. Jenna reached into the pocket of her jeans and brought it out. It glimmered in the moonlight.
"I picked it up off the floor."
He didn't know which made him gladder, the sight of the medallion or the sight of it in her hand. It meant she wasn't like the others. Then, as if to dispel that notion before it got too firm a hold on him, she said,
"Take it, Roland. I can hold it no more."
And as he took it, he saw unmistakable marks of charring on her fingers. He took her hand and kissed each burn.
"Thank ye, Si," she said, and he saw she was crying. "Thank ye, dear. To be kissed so is lovely, worth every pain. Now..."
Roland saw her eyes shift and followed them. Here were bobbing lights descending a rocky path. Beyond them he saw the building where the little sisters had been living. Not a convent, but a ruined hacienda that looked 1,000 years old. There were three candles. As they drew closer, Roland saw that there were only three sisters. Mary wasn't among them. He drew his guns.
"Ooh, it's a gunslinger man he is."
Louise.
"A scary man."
Michella.
"And he's found his lady love as well as his shooters."
Tamra.
"His slut whore."
Louise, laughing angrily. Not afraid. At least, not of his weapons.
"Put them away,"
Jenna told him, and when she looked saw that he already had. The others, meanwhile, had drawn closer.
"Ooh, see, she cries."
Tamra.
"Doffed her habit she has."
Michella.
"Perhaps it's her broken vows she cries for. Why such tears, pretty?"
Louise.
"Because he kissed my fingers where they were burned,"
Jenna said.
"I've never been kissed before. It made me cry."
"Ooh! Lovely!" Next he'll stick his thing in her, even lovelier.
Jenna bore their japes with no sign of anger. When they were done, she said,
I'm going with him. Stand aside.
They gaped at her, counterfeit laughter disappearing in shock.
No, Louise whispered. Are ye mad? Ye know what'll happen.
No, and neither do you, Jenna said. Besides, I care not.
She half-turned and held out her hand to the mouth of the ancient hospital tent. It was a faded olive drab in the moonlight, with an old red cross drawn on its roof. Roland wondered how many towns the sisters had been to with this tent, which was so small and plain on the outside, so huge and gloriously dim on the inside. How many towns, and over how many years? Now cramming the mouth of it in a black, shiny tongue with the doctor bugs. They had stopped their singing. Their silence was terrible.
Stand aside or I'll have them on ye, Jenna said.
Ye never would,
Sister Michella cried in a low, horrified voice.
Aye, I've already set them on Sister Coquina. She's a part of their medicine now.
Their gasp was like cold wind passing through dead trees. Nor was all of that dismay directed toward their own precious hides. What Jenna had done was clearly far outside their reckoning.
Then you're damned, Sister Tamra said.
Such ones to speak of damnation. Stand aside.
They did. Roland walked past them, and they shrank away from him. But they shrank from her more. Damned? He asked after they had skirted the hacienda and reached the path beyond it. The kissing moon glimmered above a tumbled scree of rocks. In its light, Roland could see a small black opening low on the scarp. He guessed it was the cave the sisters called Thoughtful House. What did they mean, damned?
Never mind. All we have to worry about now is Sister Mary. I like it not that we haven't seen her.
She tried to walk faster, but he grasped her arm and turned her about. He could still hear the singing of the bugs, but faintly. They were leaving the place of the sisters behind. Aluria, too, if the compass in his head was still working. He thought the town was in the other direction. The husk of the town, he amended. Tell me what they meant.
Perhaps nothing. Ask me not, Roland. What good is it?
'Tis done, the bridge burned, I can't go back, nor would if I could.
She looked down, biting her lip, and when she looked up again, Roland saw fresh tears falling on her cheeks.
I have supped with them. There were times when I couldn't help it, no more than you could help drinking their wretched soup, no matter if you knew what was in it.
Roland remembered John Norman saying,
A man has to eat, a woman too.
He nodded.
I'd go no farther down that road. If there's to be damnation, let it be of my choosing, not theirs. My mother meant well by bringing me back to them, but she was wrong.
She looked at him shyly and fearfully, but met his eyes.
I'd go beside ye on your road, Roland of Gilead, for long as I may or as long as ye'd have me.
You're welcome to your share of my way, he said. And I am blessed by your company, he would have finished. But before he could, a voice spoke from the tangle of moon shadow ahead of them, where the path at last climbed out of the rocky, sterile valley in which the little sisters had practiced their glamours.
It's a sad duty to stop such a pretty elopement, but stop it I must.
Sister Mary came from the shadows. Her fine white habit with its bright red rose had reverted to what it really was, the shroud of a corpse. Caught, hooded in its grimy folds, was a wrinkled, sagging face from which two black eyes stared. They looked like rotted dates. Below them, exposed by the thing's smile, four great incisors gleamed. Upon the stretched skin of Sister Mary's forehead, bells tinkled. But not the dark bells, Roland thought. There was that.
Stand clear, Jenna said, or I'll bring the cantam on ye.
No, Sister Mary said, stepping closer. Ye won't.
They'll not stray so far from the others. Shake your head and ring those damned bells until the clappers fall out, and still they'll never come.
Jenna did as bid, shaking her head furiously from side to side. The dark bells rang piercingly, but without that extra, almost psychic tone quality that had gone through Roland's head like a spike. And the doctor bugs, what Jenna had called the cantam, did not come. Smiling ever more broadly, Roland had an idea Mary herself hadn't been completely sure they wouldn't come until the experiment was made. The corpse woman closed in on them, seeming to float above the ground. Her eyes flicked toward him.
"And put that away," she said.
Roland looked down and saw that one of his guns was in his hand. He had no memory of drawing it.
"Unless 'tis blessed or dipped in some sect's holy wet, blood, water, semen, it can't harm such as me, gunslinger, for I am more shade than substance, yet still the equal to such as yourself for all that."
She thought he would try shooting her anyway. He saw it in her eyes.
"Those shooters are all ye have," her eyes said. "Without 'em, you might as well be back in the tent we dreamed around ye, caught up in our slings and awaiting our pleasure."
Instead of shooting, he dropped the revolver back into its holster and launched himself at her with his hands out. Sister Mary uttered a scream that was mostly surprise, but it was not a long one. Roland's fingers clamped down on her throat and choked the sound off before it was fairly started. The touch of her flesh was obscene. It seemed not just alive, but various beneath his hands, as if it was trying to crawl away from him. He could feel it running like liquid, flowing, and the sensation was horrible beyond description. Yet he clamped down harder, determined to choke the life out of her. Then there came a blue flash, not in the air, he would think later. That flash happened inside his head, a single stroke of lightning as she touched off some brief but powerful brainstorm, and his hands flew away from her neck. For one moment his dazzled eyes saw great wet gouges in her gray flesh, gouges in the shapes of his hands. Then he was flung backward, hitting the scree on his back and sliding, hitting his head on a jutting rock hard enough to provoke a second lesser flash of light.
"Nay, my pretty man," she said,
grimacing at him, laughing with those terrible dull eyes of hers.
"Ye don't choke such as me, and I'll take ye slow for impertinence, cut ye shallow in 100 places to refresh my thirst. First, though, I'll have this vowless girl, and I'll have those damned bells off her in the bargain."
"Come and see if you can," Jenna cried in a trembling voice, and shook her head from side to side. The dark bells rang mockingly, provokingly. Mary's grimace of a smile fell away.
"Oh, I can," she breathed.
Her mouth yawned. In the moonlight, her fangs gleamed in her gums like bone needles poked through a red pillow.
"I can, and I..."
There was a growl from above them. It rose, then splintered into a volley of snarling barks. Mary turned to her left, and in the moment before the snarling thing left the rock on which it was standing, Roland could clearly read the startled bewilderment on Big Sister's face. It launched itself at her, only a dark shape against the stars, legs outstretched so it looked like some sort of weird bat. But even before it crashed into the woman, striking her in the chest above her half-raised arms and fastening its own teeth on her throat, Roland knew exactly what it was. As the shape bore her over onto her back, Sister Mary uttered a gibbering shriek that went through Roland's head like the dark bells themselves. He scrambled to his feet, gasping. The shadowy thing tore at her, forepaws on either side of her head, rear paws planted on the grave shroud above her chest where the rose had been. Roland grabbed Jenna, who was looking down at the fallen sister with a kind of frozen fascination. "Come on," he shouted, "before it decides it wants a bite out of you, too." The dog took no notice of them as Roland pulled Jenna past. It had torn Sister Mary's head mostly off. Her flesh seemed to be changing somehow, decomposing very likely. But whatever was happening, Roland did not want to see it. He didn't want Jenna to see it either. They half-walked, half-ran to the top of the ridge, and when they got there, paused for breath in the moonlight, heads down, hands linked, both of them gasping harshly. The growling and snarling below them had faded, but was still faintly audible when Sister Jenna raised her head and asked him,
"What was it? You know I saw it in your face. And how could it attack her? We all have power over animals, but she has had the most."
"Not over that one." Roland found himself recalling the unfortunate boy in the next bed. Norman hadn't known why the medallions kept the sisters at arm length, whether it was the gold or the god. Now Roland knew the answer.
"It was a dog, just a town dog. I saw it in the square before the green folk knocked me out and took me to the sisters. I suppose the other animals that could run away did run away, but not that one. It had nothing to fear from the little sisters of Illyria, and somehow it knew it didn't. It bears the sign of the Jesus man on its chest, black fur on white. Just an accident of its birth, I imagine. In any case, it's done for her now. I knew it was lurking around. I heard it barking to her 3 times.
"Why?" Jenna whispered. "Why would it come? Why would it stay? And why would it take on her as it did?"
Roland of Gilead responded as he ever had and ever would when such useless, mystifying questions were raised.
"Kaa. Come on, let's get as far as we can from this place before we hide up for the day."
As far as they could turned out to be 8 miles at most, and probably, Roland thought as the two of them sank down in a patch of sweet-smelling sage beneath an overhang of rock, a good deal less. 5, perhaps. It was him slowing them down, or rather it was the residue of the poison in the soup. When it was clear to him that he could not go farther without help, he asked her for one of the reeds. She refused, saying that the stuff in it might combine with the unaccustomed exercise to burst his heart.
"Besides," she said as they lay back against the embankment of the little nook they had found, "they'll not follow. Those that are left, Michela, Louise, Tamra, will be packing up to move on. They know to leave when the time comes. That's why the sisters have survived as long as they have, as we have. We are strong in some ways, but weak in many more. Sister Mary forgot that. It was her arrogance that did for her as much as the cross dog, I think."
She had cached not just his boots and clothes beyond the top of the ridge, but the smaller of his 2 purses as well. When she began to apologize for not bringing his bedroll in the larger purse, she tried, she'd said, but they were simply too heavy, Roland hushed her with a finger to her lips. He thought it a miracle to have as much as he did. And besides, this he did not say, but perhaps she knew it anyway, the guns were the only things that really mattered. The guns of his father and his father before him, all the way back to the days of Arthur Eld, when dreams and dragons had still walked the earth.
"Will you be all right?" he asked her as they settled down.
The moon had set, but dawn was still at least 3 hours away. They were surrounded by the sweet smell of the sage, a purple smell, he thought it then, and ever after. Already he could feel it forming a kind of magic carpet under him, which would soon float him away to sleep. He thought he had never been so tired.
"Roland, I know not."
But even then, he thought she had known. Her mother had brought her back once. No mother would bring her back again. And she had eaten with the others, had taken the communion of the sisters. Kaa was a wheel. It was also a net from which none ever escaped. But then he was too tired to think much of such things. And what good would thinking have done in any case? As she said, the bridge was burned. Roland guessed that even if they were to return to the valley, they would find nothing but the cave the sisters had called the Thoughtful House. The surviving sisters would have packed their tent of bad dreams and moved on, just a sound of bells and singing insects moving down the late-night breeze. He looked at her, raised a hand, it felt heavy, and touched the curl which once more lay across her forehead. Jenna laughed, embarrassed. "That one always escapes. It's wayward like its mistress." She raised her hand to poke it back in, but Roland took her fingers before she could. "It's beautiful," he said. "Black as night and as beautiful as forever." He sat up. It took an effort. Weariness dragged at his body like soft hands. He kissed the curl. She closed her eyes and sighed. He felt her trembling beneath his lips. The skin of her brow was very cool, the dark curve of the wayward curl like silk. "Push back your wimple as you did before," he said. She did it without speaking. For a moment he only looked at her. Jenna looked back gravely, her eyes never leaving his. He ran his hands through her hair, feeling its smooth weight, like rain, he thought, rain with weight, then took her shoulders and kissed each of her cheeks. He drew back for a moment. "Would ye kiss me as a man does a woman, Roland, on my mouth?" "Aye." And as he had thought of doing as he lay caught in the silken infirmary tent, he kissed her lips. She kissed back with the clumsy sweetness of one who has never kissed before, except perhaps in dreams. Roland thought to make love to her then. It had been long and long, and she was beautiful. But he fell asleep instead, still kissing her. He dreamed of the cross dog barking its way across a great open landscape. He followed, wanting to see the source of its agitation, and soon he did. At the far edge of that plain stood the Dark Tower, its smoky stone outlined by the dull orange ball of a setting sun, its fearful windows rising in a spiral. The dog stopped at the sight of it and began to howl. Bells, peculiarly shrill and as terrible as doom, began to ring. Dark bells, he knew, but their tone was as bright as silver. At their sound, the dark windows of the tower glowed with the deadly red light, the red of poisoned roses. A scream of unbearable pain rose in the night. The dream blew away in an instant, but the scream remained, now unraveling to a moan. That part was real as the tower brooding in its place at the very end of Endworld. Roland came back to the brightness of dawn and the soft purple smell of desert sage. He had drawn both his guns and was on his feet before he had fully realized he was awake. Jenna was gone. Her boots lay empty beside his purse. A little distance from them, her jeans lay as flat as discarded snake skins. Above them was her shirt. It was, Roland observed with wonder, still tucked into the pants. Beyond them was her empty wimple, with its fringe of bells lying on the powdery ground. He thought for a moment that they were ringing, mistaking the sound he heard at first. Not bells, but bugs. The doctor bugs. They sang in the sage, sounding a bit like crickets, but far sweeter. Jenna? No answer, unless the bugs answered, for their singing suddenly stopped. Jenna? Nothing. Only the wind and the smell of the sage. Without thinking about what he was doing, like play-acting, reason thought was not his strong suit. He bent, picked up the wimple, and shook it. The dark bells rang. For a moment there was nothing. Then 1,000 small dark creatures came scurrying out of the sage, gathering on the broken earth. Roland thought of the battalion marching down the side of the freighter's bed and took a step back. Then he held his position, as he saw the bugs were holding theirs. He believed he understood. Some of this understanding came from his memory of how Sister Mary's flesh had felt under his hands, how it had felt various, not one thing, but many. Part of it was what she had said.
I have supped with them.
Such as them might never die, but they might change. The insects trembled, a dark cloud of them blotting out the white, powdery earth. Roland shook the bells again. A shiver ran through them in a subtle wave, and then they began to form a shape. They hesitated, as if unsure of how to go on, regrouped, began again. What they eventually made on the whiteness of the sand there between the blowing fluffs of lilac-colored sage was one of the great letters, the letter C. Except it wasn't really a letter, the gunslinger saw. It was a curl. They began to sing, and to Roland it sounded as if they were singing his name. The bells fell from his unnerved hand, and when they struck the ground and chimed there, the mass of bugs broke apart, running in every direction. He thought of calling them back. Ringing the bells again might do that. But to what purpose? To what end?
Ask me not, Roland. 'Tis done. The bridge burned.
Yet she had come to him one last time, imposing her will over a thousand various parts that should have lost the ability to think when the whole lost its cohesion. And yet she had thought somehow, enough to make that shape. How much effort might that have taken? They fanned wider and wider, some disappearing into the sage, some trundling up the sides of a rock overhang, pouring into the cracks where they would, mayhap, wait out the heat of the day. They were gone. She was gone. Roland sat down on the ground and put his hands over his face. He thought he might weep, but in time the urge passed. When he raised his head again, his eyes were as dry as the desert he would eventually come to, still following the trail of Walter, the man in black.
If there's to be damnation, she had said, let it be of my choosing, not theirs.
He knew a little about damnation himself, and he had an idea that the lessons, far from being done, were just beginning. She had brought him the purse with his tobacco in it. He rolled a cigarette and smoked it, hunkered over his knees. He smoked it down to a glowing roach, looking at her empty clothes the while, remembering the steady gaze of her dark eyes, remembering the scorch marks on her fingers from the chain of the medallion. Yet she had picked it up, because she had known he would want it, had dared that pain, and Roland now wore both around his neck. When the sun was fully up, the gunslinger moved on west. He would find another horse eventually, or a mule, but for now he was content to walk. All that day he was haunted by a ringing, singing sound in his ears, a sound like bells. Several times he stopped and looked around, sure he would see a dark following shape flowing over the ground, chasing after as the shadows of our best and worst memories chase after. But no shape was ever there. He was alone in the low hill country west of Aluria. Quite alone.